Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tokini. This is our Legends series brought to you by Edward Jones and Gracefully Yours greeting cards. Our special guest today is Pam Tillis. She's the child of country music royalty. She's always been determined from a young age to find her own unique persona as a singer and songwriter. Now a member of the Grand Ole Opry Hall of Fame, Pam has recorded so many beautiful songs, including Maybe It Was Memphis. She's a three-time CMA Award winner, including 1994 Female Vocalist of the Year. Pam Tillis, it's an honor to have you on Success Made Last. Welcome.
Hey there, I'm doing great. How are you today?
Excellent. Well, we are great fans of your work and all of your songs, and we think that your songwriting and singing are really getting better over the course of time.
Oh, I like to think I'm aging like fine wine. Sure, I'll go with that.
We've been fans for a long time. You've recorded so many beautiful songs, especially Maybe It Was Memphis. Tell us about the background of that song.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's so special because it's been a fan favorite. You never know why a song, sometimes you don't really know what it is that's connecting or how it's connecting. You know, music and art and anything subjective like that, you can't boil it down to a formula, but there's something about that song and I guess that performance that grabbed people, and it's just been an amazing experience for me to witness that. And even, you know, it's almost 30 years since that song hit the top of the charts, and to look out and see people sing along with it and holding their, well, it was cigarette lighters, now it's cell phones, you know, holding their phones up in the air, and it's kind of a little bit of an anthem, but it's a song about a summer romance, and I just ran across that song. I was looking for material. And I write a lot of my own songs, but living in Nashville where there's so many great songwriters, I never wanted to limit myself just to my own songs. So I just was at a publishing company that I knew of there called Criteria Music. And the gentleman played me all these songs, and that one just really stood out. It grabbed me, and it wasn't a very good demo. You know, there's a songwriter will make a version of the song for artists to hear, and mm-hmm. It was pretty crappy. It was pretty bad demo. I'm gonna be honest with you, and I think that's why nobody had really recorded it up until that time. But I was able to hear through it, and I knew there was something special there.
Have you done any further collaboration with Michael Anderson?
No, I haven't. It's funny that we haven't, and I think that's a good idea, really. I think that it's something that I think it would be kind of a real special thing to do that. For some reason, we just haven't done it all these years, but he's still out there doing his thing, and I'm still out there doing mine, so I imagine it's not too late.
Speaking of demo tapes, we read that your dad, Mel Tillis, used to listen to demos in the middle of the night. Is that music still streaming through your subconscious?
You know, it's in there. It's in there. It sure is. And I do think that, you know, being exposed to music in that way as just a little kid, I think it really shaped me and made me fall in love with music and fall in love with songwriting, and feeling Daddy's excitement when he would come home with a new song that he'd written. Yeah, it's that it made an impression.
It must have. We have to tell you that we love the sense of humor in some of your songs. Who were the mentors in your life that had those great senses of humor?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, you just mentioned one. You know, Daddy was just a funny guy on and off stage. And I think, you know, I think humor runs in the it runs in families. A lot of times if people have funny parents, the kids will all have senses of humor. So all my siblings are funny. They really are. I'm the oldest of six. And everybody's got kind of a slightly warped sense of humor. So I'll start there, you know, and my best friend Callie, and she's funny. And my husband is, he mostly tells dumb dad jokes, but he's really good at impressions. And then I think my dogs are funny.
Oh, that's good.
So, I don't know. I think the flip side of tragedy is comedy, and you know, the world is a pretty messed up place, so you know, you have to have a sense of humor to survive it. So
you got it. We also love the origin stories and to find out what is the backstory on some of these interesting songs. Like, where did Betty Has a Bass Boat come from?
Oh, that was song was just written kind of for fun. It was just kind of a whim. But I'd had an idea. I read a quote. It was Cher said, you know, she was coming off her fourth husband or something. And she said, women have a terrible habit of making a big deal over nothing and then marrying them. I don't know, that stuck in my mind. And at the same time too, the whole AA 12 step, all these terms from the 12 step program.
Yeah.
People started using them, you know. People were always talking about being in denial. This was back in the 90s, and it was sort of a new thing for that to people to really use all those 12 step terms. And so the idea of being in denial was, that was in my mind. And so remember that old Roger Miller song, The Last Word in Memory is Me?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was just thinking, I don't know. So all those things kind of came out, and I was thinking about Cleopatra, Queen of Denial, and it's just a woman, about a woman who is not really seeing things the way they really are. You know, she's got on, I call them the rose-colored glasses of love. And we've all been there, men too. We've all worn those glasses. And so that's what that song was about. And then we put that little kind of King Tut, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We put that music to it. And the next thing you know, there's line dancing to it. So go figure.
Well, of course there is. It's because we're always looking for a great line dance. So here's another question on origin stories. What's the backstory on your dad's song, Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town?
Yeah, a little bit. And I can't remember. I mean, these weren't people that I knew. They were somebody that Daddy knew in his hometown, and a gentleman had come back from the war, and you know, had lost his legs, and I think it was a bit of a situation, and apparently Ruby was a very good looking woman, you know, and anyway, there was some kind of melodrama there that Daddy was aware of as a young kid or man, as a young man, and that was in his mind when he wrote that song.
Have you ever covered that song?
You know, I haven't ever covered that song because, I mean, I guess you could really change all the, you know, it's coming from a male point of view. It'd be a little tricky to change it. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I've written so many songs in my life, and every now and then you completely misplace one, which sounds kind of crazy, but if you lose the notebook that it's in or the demo that you did, and
yeah.
The reason I mention that is as I wrote a song with a lady by the name of Leslie Satcher, who's written tons of hits. She's an incredible songwriter. And we, both of us, and it's really odd, and maybe we just need to get back together and piece it back together. But we actually, you know how in the old country music there'd be a song that would come out from a male point of view, and then there'd be a female answer to that song. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like a Dottie West song, you mean?
Like for instance, It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels was a song that was an answer to some other song that was a big hit about honky tonk angels.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Well, Leslie Thatcher and I actually wrote an answer to Daddy's song, and it was coming from Ruby's point of view. And in our song, the man in the song has kind of, he not only has he lost his legs, but he's kind of gone around the bend. He's gone a little bit off his rocker. And Ruby is completely innocent in our song. So we vindicated Ruby. So we're going to have to find that song or resurrect it somehow.
That's hilarious. I love vindication songs. That would be.
Yeah, call it. Don't. We're going to call it Don't Blame Ruby.
Don't Blame Ruby.
In your songwriting, you have this incredible ability to empathize. It's truly a beautiful skill. Who are some of the mentors who taught you to write empathetically?
Oh, that's an interesting topic. That is a sensitive question, that you don't always get questions of that quality. I empathy is something that I think about, and I feel like, I do think about it. I feel like in this world, and in with everything so crazy, I think there's a lot of things that challenge people in their ability to be empathetic. And one is just everybody's just worried about how they're going to get by, much less anybody else. You know what I mean? Times are really, really challenging, especially in the middle of this pandemic. I mean,
oh yeah.
And so sometimes when you're worried about your own household, it's hard to just, you know, to be as concerned as you'd like to be about your fellow man. And that's when we need empathy the most. It truly is. And I also think that the amount of social media, the time people spend on their screens is time that they're not spending with each other. And now even being able to look each other in the eye is so hard right now. There's so many things, but I think empathy is what makes us human. I mean, I think it's what separates us. I think that's the kind of quality that separates us from the animal kingdom.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just think empathy is really important. So if I've in any way expressed empathy in my music, I'm grateful for that because I do value it a lot.
Yeah, and I know that you do. And I think that the way you write songs with empathy teaches people empathy, and I think at one point you said that if people can hear something about themselves in my song that really matters to you, and when it comes to empathy, I think it just kind of seeps out. So if they didn't get any teaching about empathy from their parents, maybe they get it from a great Pam Tillis song.
Oh gosh, I can't even hardly handle that compliment. Thank you. That's the power of any artistic expression, whether it's a song or a dance or a painting or a movie, any kind of great story. That's the way we try to connect with each other and learn from each other. So anyway, thank you. And along those lines, Nashville just lost one of its greatest songwriters. I want everybody to listen to my new music and everything and enjoy my music, but also I want to encourage everybody to go back and listen to some great John Prine, especially in his last album too, which is a masterpiece. But talk about somebody whose music expresses empathy. Oh my God. That's incredible. You know, Nashville's full of songwriters like that. Rodney Crowell, John Prine. There's so many. and great country music is like that, too. You know, it's really, it really connects on the most basic human level. And I think that's why people still love classic country, is it's so real and it's so honest. And I hope we never lose that.
I trust that we don't. We're counting on those future riders out there to keep that legacy going. So let's move to talking a little bit about your industry. Can you give some advice to young musicians on picking the right genre so they can find their way, knowing that the great Pam Tillis wanted to be a rock star at one point in your career?
Well, you know, here's the honest truth of it, is I feel like genres don't matter quite as much as they did. When I was a kid, they had to know what bin to put you in the record store. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. I had an A&R guy tell me that, because I was kind of actually doing a little bit of everything. And he said, no, you've got to really focus in. The main thing is to develop your unique style, and your unique style might be a blend of it might be a hybrid. It might be a little rock. It might be a little country. I think it's okay. Just be unique, be yourself, and I think let other people worry about how to market it. I really believe that now.
Well, that's a great lesson. Focus on what you can focus on. So let's wrap up today's show with a few more questions for Pam Tillis. I read that your dad gave you his bus as a wedding gift. Is that old bus still running?
Oh, my gosh. No, I think I got the last 100,000 miles out of it. We have one gig in Cumberland, Maryland. I think the day I decided to sell that bus was the day we had to push it up a mountain. I said, okay, maybe I need to lease a new bus. But thank you, Daddy. I did get, it did help me. It helped me for a little while. But it was an older bus, and like I said, I got the last little bit of life out of it. But what a wonderful thing.
So Pam, I've been in bands for over 50 years now as a drummer, averaging about 7 years per band. I got to ask you, what is the secret in terms of great chemistry when you combine voices, rhythm, bass, backbeat, and the E word, ego, when it comes to bands?
Oh gosh, ego is the most dangerous thing you mentioned. It just really is. I feel like if everybody can just check their ego at the door and just go. First of all, as a lady boss, this is what I've had to learn, and I've had to learn the hard way, because many years ago, I feel like, I'm going to be really honest, when the pressure is on you. I mean, we're talking about serious pressure. It's real easy to take it out on other people around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, maybe not be mean or yell. I've never been a yeller. But just to not be as careful with your employees as you would like to be, So what I've really learned over time is a real leader's job is actually to serve the group instead of the group serving them. And and all the best leaders know that. They really do know that. And I think so just, but if everybody just realizes too, and this goes for the lead singer on down to the person playing drums in the back, you're not there for your ego. You're really there for the people. That's the truth. And if you let the ego get in the way of what you can give to the people, then that's a real tragedy. So if everybody's just professional, but man, I hear stories about bands, and it's really tough because, nobody's perfect. But the people that know how to get over themselves are the people that last in the business.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Hey, final question for you is about collaboration. When you let people in your room, let's say like Lori Morgan, to collaborate with you, why is it important to let people like that into your life to bring out the best version?
Oh, well, I mean, first of all, you collaborate because it's fun. And just to keep it fresh for your audience and, yeah, and you do, you hope that the sum is greater than the parts. Definitely.
Yep.
So, and you come up with, yeah, Lori and I had a lot of fun. We did two records together and, we just did it because it was fun. And you reach a point in your career where, you know, you've done everything everybody told you you needed to do to make it. You know what I mean? You follow the guidance of the people around you that you trust. And after a while, you go, hey, sometimes I just want to do something because I want to. You know, everything's not about money all the time or like where, you know, where how it's going to advance you. Sometimes you just want to do something for the love of it. And she's a great person to sing with. She's classic country and we have that in common, you know. So that was a good collaboration.
Well, Pam, thank you so much for being on our Success Made to Last Legends show. Give a closing word of encouragement to America as we hit our restart button this month.
Well, I'll tell you something that happened for me yesterday. And I was driving down the highway, and there was a billboard up in Nashville, Tennessee. Dolly Parton had, you know, bought that billboard, and it showed her theme park there, and there were flowers, and there were butterflies. It's all classic Dolly, and it said, "Brighter days are ahead."
Oh.
And brighter days, and I'm like, oh, that's so Dolly, you know, just complete optimism. We have to be smart. We have to be careful. We have to be patient. We have to be kind to each other and gentle with ourselves. But this is something that we will learn to deal with. Some of the best minds in the world are working so hard on it. And I have faith that human beings are resilient, and we will persevere, and we will get on the other side of it.
Well, thanks again, Pam, for being on our Legends show. Make sure and visit PamTillis.com to see her upcoming concert schedule. We appreciate Pam being on our program today. And thanks again to our sponsors, Edward Jones and Gracefully Yours, for their great support. As we always say here, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program. And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours greeting cards and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy. They also say, crunch tacos, not abs. And you're crazy is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is Life is Short, Lick the Bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.